I'm Megan Segura.
And I'm Eric J. Mack.
And this is The Daily Dish, Bravo's official podcast.
Oh my God, Megan, we haven't spoken to each other in weeks.
I know. It's been forever long. And I think the cherry on top of the sad sundae is that you sent me a photo because you went back to 30 Rock and you sent me a photo of the podcast studio. Bleak.
It is bleak. We are allowed to go back into the office, just to give you guys a bit of an update, to collect any items, like personal items, from our desk. So we had to register, and you got to go in and you have a certain time. So I went in, got a bunch of stuff from my desk, took a picture of the podcast studio, which was right behind where Megan and I sat, and sent it to her. And it's just like dark and the chairs are there and all the equipment's just like looking really sad. And then I scoped out your desk, Megan, and it truly, truly looks like you evaporated into thin air. Like there's a notebook open with like a pen next to it. Like there's a sweater on the chair. It's just like, it's so weird.
It's like the leftovers, right?
Yeah.
But we're back together.
We're back. And I know you can't see me, but I did just get a haircut. And so,
oh my God, it looks so good.
Oh my God, thank you so much. But I do want to point out too that your hair looks so good. You got it done before your trip.
Uh-huh.
And it's like really long and it's like lighter and it looks so good.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I appreciate you. Also, are you officially done with the social media detox?
Yes. Well, for now, yeah. So I did like a full 21 days and then came back. And I think, you know, some of the listeners have responded and saw the post that I put up yesterday about just like, do what you got to do in this social media space. So I am back on for now, especially because this week has been so major for Bravo and there is so much going on. So I did want to be able to talk to people and see what the conversations were like, especially around Potomac and everything that's happening in the Bravo world. So for now, I am back on both, you know, Instagram and Twitter. So feel free to reach out. But, you know, I think I'm going to take some time here and there to dip out and back away and do all of the things that you need to do to just stay happy and healthy.
Yeah. I'm thinking about going on an alcohol cleanse for sort of the same reasons.
Right. You know, I mean, you just got to do these things once in a while, almost just to challenge yourself to see if you can do it. And then ultimately.
Yeah. Because if not.
Right. Right. Well, yeah, that's a whole other story. But, you know, it's ultimately a challenge and also just a way to see like what your life is like without these things that you feel maybe not dependent on, but feel like is taking over too much in some aspect of your life.
So one thing we need to talk about immediately is the trailer of Southern Charm season 7.
Oh, yes. Let's play the audio.
This season on Southern Charm.
He's not funny. He's in magazine.
When you're in an unhealthy relationship, you start acting like a little bitch.
Are you in love with him?
No. You and I need to go our separate ways.
Are you serious right now?
He's got more honey than any honeybee.
The quarantine has just been tough.
Since she tested positive.
Oh, she's positive?
Yes!
For me, it's about the change I want to see in this little southern town of mine.
Catherine, you've spent your entire life living in a bubble of white privilege.
It's easy.
Oh my God, what is she doing? She's off the wagon.
Taylor's chill. I mean,
but if she had the goal of being married.
Daddy. Hi, this is Madison, friend of mine.
Do you like her?
Yeah.
You're just gonna like drop it and be friends with Austin?
TBD.
Thomas got her over.
Just as good.
You are in the most abusive relationship ever.
That's a miserable Catherine move. What the f?
Shut up.
Who's the pussy here? I'm still sitting here. Talk to me.
No, you don't deserve
it. That's what I thought. You f***ing beta bitch.
I haven't heard from you in so long.
Yeah, I haven't heard from you.
You're full of f***ing
That's bullshit.
Is there something in your eye?
Like, I have on fake eyelashes. What the f*** are you coming
at me like
this
for? All right, you can leave. You can leave then.
What they're trying to do is kick this thing's ass before it kicks ours.
Slowly, you're going to miss some of the contagions.
It's like a huge statue, and it is of John C. Calhoun, obviously an ancestor of Catherine's. He was a proud enslaver.
Oh my God, this I had no statue. Idea.
And that is why this statue must come down.
When I first saw the monkey emoji, I was just like, what the hell, Catherine?
Like, in my heart, I know I'm the furthest thing from racism.
Okay, wow.
Yeah. It feels like a different show altogether a little bit.
Absolutely.
I think.
No.
Yeah. It's no longer this boys will be boys sort of, you know, summer fun, which is fair because it no longer is the reality for any of us right now, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the theme that I'm getting from this trailer is accountability, and everyone is going to have to take some in some respect. One positive thing that I think you and I can both agree on is that Madison is a full-time cast member.
Honestly, I couldn't be happier. And I just, even the bit we got in this trailer of the Austin and Madison love saga is exactly what I needed.
Yeah, 100%. And I am also, like, still rooting for them in so many ways. It's, I know some people might view Madison as the villain because of what she did last season, but I don't think of her that way. And I just think they are an adorable couple. And I hope that they can work through whatever it is and just commit to each other. I feel like they're always on or off. They're hot or cold. There's no in between. Maybe we can find an in between for them this season.
It's also just going to feel so different because, you know, we don't have Cameron. We don't have Naomi. We don't have Chelsea. Okay, Chelsea. So I'm just curious, but we do have Cameron's friend.
That's true. We have some new faces, which is always refreshing, I think, with a show like this. I feel like it's easier to bring in new people. Sometimes with Housewives, I feel like it's a little riskier to bring in a new face, or there's a little bit more judgment. But on a show like Southern Charm, it's more welcoming, I think, to have somebody new. The one thing I am really disappointed about, knowing that Naomi will not be back, is that we also won't have Matul.
Oh, poor Eric. I'm so sorry for your loss.
I will still follow him on Instagram. That's still going to happen. Now that I'm back, he's part of my life again.
Another thing that we wanted to tell everyone about is tickets for the first ever virtual happy hour by Bravo are on sale now.
You guys can get intimate with some of Bravo's favorite couples, and they're going to dish on all things romance, relationships, quarantine living, and so much more. The theme this month is Fall in Love with Bravo. And there's a whole bunch of incredible Bravo Lebs who are partaking in the event.
We'll have Kyle and Amanda from Summer House, Margaret and Joe from The Real Housewives of New Jersey, and Reza and Adam from Shaws of Sunset.
Also, Robin and Juan from The Real Housewives of Potomac, Dr. Simone and her husband Cecil from Married to Medicine. And the whole thing is moderated by Darren Karp, who you guys know from our podcast. She's Andy's assistant, and she's also the host of People TV's Reality Check.
Yep, and we've had her on the podcast a few times. So that's all happening on October 5th at 8 p.m. We'll have a link to those tickets in our description.
Okay, we have a lot to discuss today in terms of our recaps. I mean, first and foremost, Real Housewives of Potomac, the Candace and Monique altercation at the winery. I mean, I'm so glad that we are back together this week to discuss this episode because it's major.
I feel like I've watched this moment 10 times, maybe more.
Okay, good, because you definitely have to watch it a few times to really break down the order of events.
It's just chilling, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
I can't even think of another word to describe it. I mean, dramatic is how I feel we describe most moments in Real Housewives, but this was such a different level of intensity.
Yeah, for sure. We're also going to recap Below Deck Med, and we're going to dig a little bit into Bravo's Chat Room, our newest series on Sunday and Monday nights. There's also a tie-in to this week's episode of Real Housewives of Potomac on Chat Room that we'll get into. Plus, we have an interview with Leah McSweeney from Real Housewives of New York City, and we'll wrap up, as always, with Rose and Thorn. Okay, Real Housewives of Potomac, where do we begin, Megan?
It has to be with that winery altercation between Candace and Monique. It was chilling, to say the least.
I want to put out there my thoughts on the whole thing, because what's really crazy is that I worked on The Real Housewives of Potomac after show. As you guys know, I interviewed both Candace and Monique. Those interviews came out earlier this week. So I've really heard from both of them what happened, how they think they got there, and a little bit of, you know, the responsibility on both sides. So from my perspective, you know, Monique is 100% wrong for taking it there. But if you look very closely at the footage, which, Megan, I know you've watched it a few times, there's a very slight shove on her shoulder that comes from Robin. So I feel like Monique in that moment thought that that was Candace coming over the table to give her a little push. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that in the moment, it's just one of those things where, again, you don't know the right thing to do because they're clearly, the group is watching this happen and they're like, this is getting more intense. We need to do something. And you know that Robin was probably just trying to say to Monique, get out of here, like push her back. But what you're actually doing is making her snap because all she knows is that she's there, she's heated, and someone has just shoved her.
Right, exactly. So there had been the hair twirl, and then there's the little shove from Robin as Candace is reaching over to grab Monique's like shirt or like the jacket, the collar on her shirt. So I think in the heat of the moment, all of this happened so quickly, and Monique just snapped, thinking that Candace was the one who put hands on her first. You know, all that being said, giving, you know, that context to the situation went to after that moment from Monique to Candace felt so out of place in this moment, right?
I feel like we saw a switch flip in her that you couldn't turn off because she has Karen screaming in her ear, let her go. You have the producers trying to break up and she is not loosening her grip. She's aware of what's happening, it seems, because she's able to tell people, get off me, you know, like very calmly, which is scary. But then it continues because, you know, she's in the hallway and oh my God, can we talk about that poor producer whose job it is to make sure Monique doesn't go back into the room?
Excuse me.
Who's opening this door?
It's Karen. Open the door. I need to check on Monique. Open the door.
I'm right here. He won't let me out.
Where's she at? Because you're a ghetto ass, hood ass bitch.
Get her head.
And you know how to f***ing act.
Move, James. Seriously?
I can't.
James?
No. Please don't do this.
I'm going to beat her ass. That's what I'm going to do. She's been asking for it since last year.
Oh my God, James, who also is giving me Chris Hemsworth vibes. I'm just saying.
But like, I always wonder, are these producers trained for this type of situation? Because you are in a documentary situation. So wouldn't part of your instinct be to let it go? It's like if you see something happening, like as a documentary filmmaker, are you allowed to step in and change the course? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. I mean, also the way that this footage was presented was very documentary style, right? Like there was no music. They didn't cut at all. They kept rolling. And I think that is where like the producer hat went on for someone to be like, keep the cameras rolling. But then it was also a question of everybody's safety, right? Because now there's broken glass, there's things flying. She has her hand on Candace's wig, which, you know, Candace this whole time must have just been thinking like, I need to hold this down. I need to keep this on. Like, I don't want to be that woman on TV who has her, you know, wig ripped off. And you know, I feel like in that moment, Candace must have just been thinking like, keep your wig on, you know, it's just, which is horrifying. But yeah, I mean, it is sort of that question of at what point do they intervene? And I think because it escalated to a place of everyone's safety, not just Candace and Monique, but everyone around, because everyone was trying to separate the two of them. So that's where you got to, you know, divide.
I thought what was terrifying was that Candace, while she's kind of being held down by Monique, she has a broken wine glass in her hand and she's just wailing it around. I mean, that could have, I don't think she was intentionally trying to do. I think in that moment, you're just trying to get whoever is hurting you to stop hurting you. But that could have done some damage, no?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's a little hard to tell, right? The exact moment in which the glass broke and whose hand it was in. We know Monique is hit in the face with something and she has blood or red wine or something. If it's red wine, Candace was drinking white. So it might not have been her glass that hit her face, but I think the table was small. So as soon as the altercation began and things started, you know, rustling around and moving, it could have been anybody's wine glass that just got thrown or moved or whatever. So I don't know. It's really intense. And to watch it is really, I think, shocking. And so, looking back, you know, this isn't the first time we've seen some kind of physical altercation on one of our shows, right? If you look back at Real Housewives of New Jersey, we saw Joe and Joe get into it. If you look back at Atlanta, even on season 5 reunion, Portia, you know, gets into it with Kenya. And it's this huge moment and Portia's so embarrassed. And we really see the aftermath of that as we're seeing on Potomac now, the way that, you know, Monique reacts afterwards, trying to get back to Candace, the way Candace is, you know, ushered off to safety. There is a level of intensity in this moment that I think we haven't quite seen in other Housewives, but it is also, you know, not the very first time we're dealing with some kind of physical altercation or, you know, something like that.
I mean, I know that this is just not a popular opinion probably, but I just think any sort of antagonizing that happens is also, shouldn't that be, you know, shouldn't that upset people just as much? I mean, a lot of antagonizing going on between both of them. It's like going back to that moment with Candace and Ashley and the butter knife, you know? I don't know that I would have blamed Ashley for snapping in that moment. So it's just hard for me to sort of... I know that I feel like especially Giselle and Robin, like right at that moment, they washed their hands of Monique and were like, done. But I think of it in terms of also like Vanderpump Rules. Remember that moment when Stassi found out that Kristen and Jax did sleep together? She slaps Kristen, and that's what you remember from that episode. But what was also happening is Jax and Sandoval went at it so hard that there was blood. But it's like for whatever reason, we focused on that female altercation and like that was wrong. I don't know. I think it's a conversation piece for sure.
Yeah. Well, listen, it takes two to tango, right? There were two people with responsibility in what happened in this moment. I think it was taken too far by Monique when it became this physical. But also Candace does have a tendency to run her mouth and instigate things. And that doesn't sit well with people. And it especially doesn't sit well with Monique, given where they are in their friendship. And my question to you and even the listeners is, don't we think this could have been avoided if there had been some conversations between just the two of them prior? Like, I feel like for it to get to this level at this kind of event seems so out of place. And there could have been an opportunity for them to squash the beef a little bit sooner than to let it get to this point.
I think there's also a certain performative piece to it when you have a group of friends. You know, you're trying to, you don't want to be the first to back down because everyone's watching. So I think you're right. Like there's a certain calmness that comes with just two people talking versus a group watching, spectating, a little bit egging on. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's true. And, you know, I want to go back to one of the points that you made about Giselle and even Robin maybe just looking for an excuse to, quote, cancel Monique. So we see the aftermath after Candace is taken away. She calls Chris. She's very emotional. We see the way that Monique is still adrenaline pumping, really fired up. And we kind of see Giselle and Robin and I think it's Wendy, you know, having these conversations in the winery still. And like you said, in that moment, it feels like Giselle was like, that's it, I'm done. But Giselle has never really liked Monique that much either. And Robin and Monique have had their differences in the past. So, you know, as much as Monique was in the wrong, do we automatically just cancel her in this moment? Or does the real definition of her character show up in how she deals with it in the days after and what comes next and the aftermath of it? You know, like I think as friends and as a group of women who are on this show together, everyone does owe Monique some kind of explanation and some kind of opportunity to talk about what happened, but also recognize that she was wrong and Candace was the victim in this particular moment and situation. Not to say she didn't have some responsibility in that. And I'm sure at this point, Candace, you know, from what we've heard in her interview, she recognizes, I wish I had walked away sooner. I think there's regret on both sides in some sense. So it's just kind of like, where do we go from here? I think there's a lot to come in the aftermath that will really define how these women think of each other and how we as viewers move forward with someone like Monique. I want to get a little bit into Ashley and Michael, because since we haven't talked in the last couple of weeks, that was through all of this lake house drama, the texts with Candace, like all these things that have happened between Ashley and Michael since you and I last spoke.
Michael, you idiot. What are you thinking?
Now, from my perspective, Michael owes Ashley whatever she asks for at this point, right? If it's a post-nup that she wants, I'm sorry, Michael, but you have to give it to her. Like, after everything that's happened, you owe her whatever she asks for.
There's also something just so offensive. More, you know, I think it's terrible when anyone cheats, but there is this extra offense when it's on your partner who's either pregnant or just given birth. You know, it's like why the Tristan and Chloe thing hit us all very hard, where we're just like, how dare you? While she is pregnant, you're going to cheat on her. And it's the same thing in this case. Like, Ashley is postpartum. Sorry, she's not in the mood to have sex all the time. She just had a baby. She has a torn anus, right? Like, how dare you just think you're entitled to get some? So you just go out looking for it. That's not okay.
Yeah. No, it's true. And the revelation in, I guess it was last episode at this point, at the winery before the altercation, of this openness in their relationship. And, you know, she shared with the larger group that things haven't always been super conventional between the two of them. So just because that is true doesn't mean that we must excuse Michael's behavior, right? We have now more context as to why a tryst of this nature might be more common in their relationship compared to others. But it's just sort of like, you got to get on the same page. Like, Ashley and Michael need to be on the same page. And I think they are now. We saw, you know, them sit down at that lunch where the producer stepped in because Michael was getting all, you know, upset about having that really difficult conversation on camera. So hopefully now at this point, the two of them are able to move forward on the same page in the same book. They know exactly what's going on. But, you know, Ashley's a little bit making excuses for him in some ways. And it's just kind of like, hold him accountable.
Yeah, because I have to say their whole agreement bears no weight in this argument, because either you had an agreement or you don't. You either had boundaries in place or you didn't. Sounds to me like he broke whatever rules were there. So does it really matter that they were in an open relationship? No, because you're still crossing the boundaries.
Right. You're still breaking whatever rules were in place in your relationship prior to this hotel moment.
Exactly.
I don't know. I mean, I guess everything's good in the Darby house at this point, because Ashley has baby number two on the way. They seem very happy. So, you know, I'm happy. They're happy.
But I am very curious about this postnuptial, and any lawyers out there, I just want to hear from you. Like, how do you enforce this? Because you always hear certain prenuptial have like a cheating clause. How do you enforce it though? Like, do you have to bring proof of adultery? What does that look like? You know what I mean?
That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah. I mean, with this particular situation, there are plenty of pictures all over the blogs. There are text messages. Like, Ashley has the receipts, no question. But also just this idea of a postnup. I mean, if you're going to get married, how many documents do you need in place before that? Should you have a prenup? Should you get a postnup after a few years? Like, we need some legal advice on this. So if there are any listeners out there who are lawyers, like, let us know, because we need to avoid all these issues that these women are finding themselves in, particularly Ashley and Michael. There is another lady whose issues with her man I would love to get your perspective on. Do you think that Giselle doesn't actually know how many kids Jamal has?
Do we think Jamal knows how many kids he has? Because, I mean, I do genuinely wonder this about any straight man who's sexually active. Like, how do you know you don't have children out there, you know?
Oh, God, you're probably scaring. If there are any straight men listening to our show, you are scaring the shit out of them right now. But it's true. I mean, that is luckily a situation I have never had to worry about. But it's true. I mean, and from what we've heard in the rumors, and, you know, we can get into the hot mic moment in a second, but there's also, from Curtis's perspective, the number he threw out there was 6 or 7. So, but it was such an awkward moment in that interview where the producer was like asking Giselle, and she was just like, I'm not going to comment on that. I understand why she wouldn't want to speak on behalf of another person's children. Like, she can speak for her own, but it was just another moment where I was just like, man, Giselle, like, it doesn't seem like a lot of people in your life are behind this decision to get back with Jamal. Like, doesn't that weigh on you?
Yeah. I also feel like that hot mic moment with her dad, to me, is actually proof that he's the most caring father. Because, you know, I remember my mom would always say to me, I want you to trust that you can tell me anything that happens in a relationship. This is back when I was in high school. She was like, because I don't want you ever to think that you can't tell me something because I'm not going to like your boyfriend. Because she's like, in fact, all that's really going to do is create a wedge between us. Like, I'll have my opinions, but, your choices are your choices. And at the end of the day, people do pick their partner over their parents. And her point being, I'll never let someone get in between us. And I think the same is true of him. And that's why he has to say to her face, I support you in what you want to do. But then behind her back, he's like, why is she doing this? You know, he is just trying to protect his relationship with her.
I think he's going to take the mic off of me. I think I'm done. This is not a good move for her. You know, this guy's got 6, 7 baby mamas, you know. Do you want to deal with that again? No. As a father, you think twice about that kind of stuff. I'm done.
You're going to take him?
Yeah. That's it. I'm clean.
I know. I did feel bad for Curtis too, being, 82 years old, right? He's got this mic on, he wants it off. In that moment, he probably never expected that to make the show. You know, he showed up, did what Giselle asked him to do, gave his blessing as best he could, and, you know, now we all know how he really feels. But it's one of those things where I think all of us were reading between the lines prior to that moment where he was just like, I'm here, I'm doing what my daughter asked. And it's exactly what you said, Megan. It's like he's a caring father. He's going to support his daughter no matter what her decision is.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean he's got to agree with it.
Because, you know, he also has grandkids relationships with those girls at stake too, you know? So if he just digs his heels in, like, I don't want you guys together, all he's doing is creating separation. And I really feel for him and hope that this hot mic moment hasn't hurt his relationship with his daughter, you know? Because that has to be hurtful to her. And Giselle did talk about that on Bravo's chat room.
Yeah, so we can get into that a little bit later because it really did give a little bit more insight into why she thinks he reacted that way and how she kind of justifies her relationship with Jamal. So I got the chance to speak with one of my faves, Leah McSweeney from Real Housewives of New York City. We talked a little bit about everything that went down at the reunion, particularly between Dorinda and Tinsley, and how she felt being in the middle of all that. And I also asked her how the hell she got Tinsley Mortimer to recreate the WAP dance on TikTok. Here's that interview. And just so you guys know, it does end a little short. Leah had to run. There's a lot going on these days, so it's likely we've all been feeling a wide range of emotions lately, from anxiety and stress to depression, grief, even relationship issues.
It has been tough, and understandably, all of this can interfere with your happiness and prevent you from achieving your goals.
Thankfully, online professional counseling through BetterHelp is here for you now more than ever.
BetterHelp is the most convenient option, with services available worldwide.
Now, we still need to practice social distancing these days, and with BetterHelp, you can talk with counselors from the comfort of your own home and connect in a safe and private online setting.
Counselors have a broad range of expertise, and BetterHelp will match you with a counselor that's right for you. The best part? You can connect with a counselor in under 24 hours.
Send them a message at any time, and you'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly sessions over the phone or video call. whatever works for you.
It's so, so convenient, and you don't have to feel uncomfortable in an office or waiting room.
Plus, it's more affordable than traditional options, and financial aid is available.
So many people have been using BetterHelp. They are recruiting counselors in all 50 states.
And don't worry, if your counselor is not the right match for you, you can change free of charge at any time.
Right now, the Daily Dish listeners can get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/dish.
Take charge of your mental health and join over 1 million people who are doing the same. And remember, anything you say to a counselor is completely confidential.
Again, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DISH.
All right, guys, we are here with Leah McSweeney from Real Housewives of New York City. What's up, Leah?
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good.
With you. Yeah, me too. I mean, I feel like there are some congrats in order, right? So congrats on surviving your first season of Roni. Congrats on signing with WME. Congrats on your rhinoplasty. I mean, there's just so much going on.
There's a lot going on.
Now, is there anything else I should congratulate you for? Like perhaps a new man in your life?
I wish I could have you congratulating me for that. No, not yet. There is not. And, you know, I'm actually at the point where I'm kind of feeling like I'm ready for that.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you know any hot, because now I don't want to date ugly guys anymore. I only want hot guys.
I mean, I think that's fair.
That's so fucking fair.
And also, like, I mean, we're in New York City, right? Like, there's got to be some options for you out there. Like, where do you go to find dudes? Like, do you have like a routine of like what you do? I mean, I guess it's really hard right now because of, you know, the pandemic, but things are opening up here in New York. We've got indoor dining coming.
Yeah, we have indoor dining coming. We have outdoor dining. I mean, I think I just have to put in a little more effort, you know, like, I don't know. I just keep, you know, I do trust that the universe will send him my way when the time is right. So until then, I just like, you know, need to find like a friends with benefits situation.
Right. Cause that, you know, I mean, that doesn't always end well, but at least it would be something to pass the time for now.
Something. But anyway, yeah. So I don't know if there's any more congratulations in order. I think that was plenty. So thank you.
You're very welcome. I want to talk about your reunion look because I feel like it was so striking. It was so unique. Where did you get the inspiration for that look?
So actually, this amazing Brooklyn-based designer who does all sustainable stuff, Sandra from Asaga NYC, she designed it for me.
It was so cool. Did you actually think that maybe, you know, because parts of it were revealing, like, was there a part of you that was like, I can't wait till Ramona sees this?
Everyone thinks that I'm like, I'm dressing scantily to get a rise out of Ramona. You know, I've always worn tight, see-through things, so that's just what I like to wear.
Right. That's just like part of who you are, right?
Yeah. I mean, it really is. You know, I mean, she did mention my vagina again a couple times on the reunion, but, or maybe that was last week. I can't even keep track who's counting at this point. But, you know, I don't know if she got a rise out of it or not, or if it secretly made her. I mean, she looked great at the reunion anyway. She looked amazing. So
I really loved all of the memes that came out of it too, that were like Mortal Kombat, you know, like it looked like between you and Sonya and like all of the looks combined with the masks. I was like, yeah, this is definitely giving me some like 90s Mortal Kombat vibes.
The Mortal Kombat vibe, like all those memes were so funny. They were so good.
One thing that came up in part one of the reunion that I thought was interesting is you talked about the response from fans and how happy you were that it was positive. So looking back, what was it like watching yourself on the show while in quarantine? Because I feel like that's such a unique housewife experience to like see yourself first time on the show through something like that.
Yeah. I mean, look, I have nothing to compare it to because that's just my experience, like with the show is during COVID, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, I would imagine obviously it would have been so different not doing it. I'm sure there was some pros and cons, you know, obviously I still would rather not be dealing with the pandemic, but I'm sure there was some kind of silver lining of having the show air during it. Yeah, it was kind of like a surreal thing. It was weird because it's like, yeah, I was watching it like from home. The first 5 weeks I was like in Long Island. So I was with my sister and Rob and Kiki and my sister's fiance. And, you know, we'd watch it on Thursdays, obviously. And I felt very sheltered and protected. Like, yeah, I'm on TV and like I'm being, you know, my whole life is out there now. But I also felt this like kind of wall because we were isolated.
Right.
You know, it's just recently that like I go out and, you know, people recognize me and stuff because now people are out and I'm out and, you know, things like that. So it was definitely very unique and interesting.
Have you had a lot of people reach out on social media being like, I can finally relate to someone on the show? Because I feel like you brought in like a younger, fresher, such a different perspective than perhaps we've seen on Roni in a while. So what was that like, the fans reaching out about being like, oh my God, I finally can relate to someone and I relate to you?
Yeah, I get a lot of messages like that. They're really great. It's really great to see them. And it's great to get those messages, especially when people are like reaching out about like some more serious things like mental health stuff or like, you know, motherhood or just, you know, whatever, going against the grain in general or like whatever. So it's nice. It's really nice to get those messages.
I want to talk about Tinsley and the stuff that came up at the reunion with John and Scott. So did Tinsley tell you about that exchange between John and Scott when you two became close?
Yeah.
So you knew that going into the reunion. Did you expect it to come up in the way that it did?
I didn't think she was going to bring it up, actually.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, because I feel like that was something that maybe Dorinda didn't expect either. And now that that was out in the public, do you feel like the viewers now have a better idea of what the real tension was between Tinsley and Dorinda?
I think that I know I did. Like, yeah. It made sense. I know Dorinda says it has nothing to do with that, but I think it does, you know, and I think that would make sense. Like, it would be a little bit more, at least somewhat logical, because otherwise it's like, what's going on here, you know?
Yeah, right. Because nobody could really put their finger on it before, right? Everyone was like, what is the big deal? And then that revelation kind of made things make sense a little bit more.
Completely.
You recently spent some time with Tinsley to celebrate your birthday. I'm curious to know how you've seen her change since she left the show.
She's just, you know, I know she misses the show. You know, I know she liked doing the show, but obviously, you know, her priority is her life and like, you know, her goal of like, you know, being with Scott. And obviously relationships are everything. Love is everything, you know? So it makes complete sense that she left, and it was important for her to show Scott that he was the priority. I mean, because obviously the show, there was some, you know, static, I guess, between them over the show. And obviously it's very hard to be on the show and have a relationship, I think, at the end of the day. I think that she seems a lot more carefree. She's really happy. I mean, it was really great spending time with her and him. And he's a great guy. And I have to say, like, and I had never met him before. Him and Tinsley were both so concerned about like if Kiki was having fun or not. And he was really engaging. Uh-huh. He was engaging with my daughter. He was finding things to relate to her about and having conversations. And, you know, that meant a lot to me. That means everything to me, is how you treat my kid. And they just treated her with such respect and were so interested in like getting to know her that I was just, you know, it really just warmed my heart. And me and Kier just, we had such a good time with them.
That's so cute. I do feel like as an adult, like you want teenagers to like you. Like you want to be cool to the teenagers, you know? Like, so there's kind of that pressure of like, oh, we want to make sure they're having a good time.
Yeah, exactly. It was really
cool. You mentioned Tinsley being a little bit more carefree. How did you ever convince her to recreate the WAP choreography with you?
Oh, I mean, she knew it. Like, she knew about the dance and everything. And I told her, like, Tinsley, I'm trying to do this TikTok. Like, let's do it together. And I told her, Tinsley, you better practice a little because I practiced last night and we need to do this TikTok before I leave. She's like, okay, let me just, you know, but she didn't even practice that much and she was great at it.
Oh my God. I mean, I had to watch it a few times to be like, is that really Tinsley? Like, you know, I was like, okay, Leah, I totally get it. Like, this would be something that Leah would do. But I was like, there's no way that's Tinsley Mortimer. And then I was just like, oh my God.
She was amped. She was like all about it. She was all about it. She wanted to do it. Like, so, you know, I mean, and Kiki filmed us. Kiki's a great director. And, you know, it was just like, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. I mean, I definitely like, it was hard to walk for the next few days afterwards. I'm not going to lie. That is a very challenging dance. Like, I mean, it really takes a lot of physical, you know, coordination and a lot of strength to do it. It looks easy, but it's not. It's painful.
Right. It's a lot of up and down. Like, it's a lot of like pulling yourself all the way up and then getting back down low again.
Also, just that kick in the air, the initial kick in the air, and then like dropping down, like, and spreading your like fucking thighs open. Like, you're pulling up. You don't stretch beforehand, you're going to have a hard time for the next few days, like me.
Right. That is the key to TikTok dances, right? You got to stretch beforehand.
That is completely it. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, you are very close with Tinsley, but I know that you're also close with Dorinda. Do you often feel like, or did you feel like at least through this season, that you were a little bit stuck in the middle of their tension?
I still feel that way.
Yeah.
Because I do really like both of them, but then I'm also conflicted. But at the same time, like, I do see where I was, like, kind of when after Tinsley, like, left the reunion, and it was just like, I felt like it was like Luann and like kind of Ramona, you know, telling Dorinda like how they were like mad at her or whatever. And I was being like blindly loyal to her, you know, and I wasn't like when I said she doesn't hit below the belt, obviously she does. And like, I don't know. I felt like Dorinda had my back so much throughout so many times off camera and on camera, off camera. You don't understand. After fucking Rhode Island, like, I was gutted, you know, that was a very difficult trip for me. And like, Dorinda was the one that I was crying on the phone to, and she was there for me. So it's very hard for me to like, even this is the thing. It's like with my sister, even when she's wrong, I'm still going to have her fucking back.
Yeah.
You know, like, cause that's my sister. And I felt this like sisterly thing with Dorinda because of like how much she helped me through this experience that was completely new to me, completely terrifying in a lot of ways. Like, she would be on the phone with me off camera, you know? So if it looks like I'm fucking kissing her ass or whatever, that's not me kissing her ass. That's me just like being fucking loyal.
It's having her back in some ways. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I mean, you mentioned that she was there for you after the trip to Rhode Island. What advice did you give Dorinda throughout the season? Because she mentions that she talked to you a lot about what, you know, she was going through, and she leaned on you. So what did you say to Dorinda throughout the season in terms of, you know, everything that she was going through?
You know, I feel like I just listened to her a lot. You know, I feel like I listened and I tried to be there for her. Like, I'm not like the biggest like advice giver, because sometimes I like just when someone just when I call up a friend and I'm upset, I don't want their advice. I want them to just listen to me, you know,
right.
Like,
yeah.
So but we did talk a lot, you know, throughout the season and still do. So it feels, you know, kind of stuck in between like her and Tinsley. Like sometimes like I'm like, yeah, like it makes me crazy. Like, Dorinda, like, why can't you just let things go with Tinsley, you know?
Right. What went through your mind when you found out that she was leaving the show?
Oh my God.
Right. I mean, first Tinsley, then Dorinda, you know?
Exactly. Who knows, like, what will happen? I mean, anything can happen, literally. That's the one thing I learned, is that anything can happen.
Right. Expect the unexpected, right?
Exactly.
Well, in part two of the reunion, you and Ramona seem to work out the issues from her birthday party. I'm very curious to hear more about the kind of mother-daughter dynamic between the two of you.
I think because in the beginning, like, I was dealing with my own issues with my mom, you know, of the season. I was throughout the whole season, and I was dealing with it, but especially in the beginning, because she didn't want to talk to me because of the drinking, and I was very upset. And then Ramona was kind of like, you need to call her. You can't be texting her. So Ramona kind of took on this like maternal thing with me. So then I think because she took on that maternal role, when she was like, oh, you know, angry at me, or was like kind of acting like I was being bad or whatever, it was extra offensive to me, or like hurt more than it would have if it was like one of the other women, because she decided to take the maternal role on with me, you know?
I see. Yeah.
So it made it like extra painful, and it made me extra upset.
Right. No, that makes sense. I mean, I could totally see that, how it might impact you more than it would coming from one of the other women.
Exactly.
How are things with you and your mom today?
Yeah. I mean, well, we just had like a huge argument today, but you know, me, I mean, it's a challenging relationship. It just is. I wish it wasn't. I wish things were just peaceful and amazing with her, but it's just a challenging relationship. I obviously have not learned how to deal with her. I know, I mean, my, you know, Rob is always saying, oh, she's your mom. She's just going to be like this. It's the way it is. Just say yes. Just do this. And I, for some reason, it just gets me crazy. I don't know.
Right. Right. You can't quite put your finger on it.
Just can't, but that's the way it is.
Do you think that your approach to parenting has changed with everything you've been through with your mom?
I definitely am a different parent than her, but I'm not going to say I'm like a better parent at all. You know, like,
right.
God knows what my daughter will be saying about me to me when she's 20 years old, 30 years old. But I think that the thing is, like, I'm so scared of screwing my kid up. And I'm so like, oh my God, how am I fucking her up? What am I doing? Like, that if she was like, mom, like, you did X, Y, Z, and it like really messed with me, and I would just be so terrified to upset her in some way.
Okay, let's talk about Below Deck Med.
Oh my God.
Woo, child.
I couldn't stop taking notes during this episode.
Like rage notes.
Yeah, basically.
Would you rather date an actor or a chef?
Actor.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would have to agree with you because I went to theater school. I have a lot of actor friends. I know how to handle their type of ego or, you know, level of, I don't want to say crazy because that's not the right word, but you know what I mean. Like, I know how to handle that kind of personality.
Well, wait a minute. I guess I should revise my answer. Is it a struggling actor? Because that
that's a good point.
But an established actor, at least you know they're going to, and, you know, Tom is an outlier here, all right? Because he's very good looking, I think.
Oh, yes.
But with an actor, you know you're going to get nice face, hot bod. Chefs, for the most part, mixed bag.
That is very, very true. We've had a handful of both, I think, on both Below Deck Mad and Below Deck. There's been some lookers, and there's been some of, you know, the other kind.
But I don't know that I could deal with the behavior that I've seen displayed by Tom in this episode and, you know, what we've seen in the last few episodes. I never to this extent, but I do feel familiar with the type of relationship where every one of their problems becomes your problem. And it's draining. And I do feel like Malia,
right,
is caught in that, where she's having to just constantly be there for him. But is he there for her? Does he support her and like her issues and what's happening? Because she got a talking to by Sandy in this episode, and I didn't really see him stepping up to support her.
Yeah, no, the relationship from what we're seeing at this particular time seems to be going one way, right? And it's just Malia supporting Tom through this really like frustrating experience that he's going through. And, you know, it's not to say that Tom's frustration isn't a bit justified, because if you are losing control over what you had planned to do and it's the last charter and the provisions have been messed up multiple times at this point, like, that is an extremely frustrating and difficult thing to have to deal with. And it throws a wrench in all of your plans. So I understand why he is so upset and he's angry and he is just like, he doesn't really know what to do now. Like, everything is kind of ruined and the food is a huge part of the guest experience. But he can also like manage that anger and frustration in a different way and not be taking it out on literally everybody who walks through the galley, like whether it's Bugsy, whether it's Malia, whether it's Captain Sandy, whether it's Aisha. I mean, he will just rip into anyone, and that's not okay.
Well, and obviously the subtext of everything is what he's saying to Malia is like, this is my reputation. It's not about the charter guests. It's about the people who are going to watch these episodes. And if they see that charter guests are complaining the food isn't good, Tom's not getting hired for future jobs. You know, he makes his money being a personal chef.
It's my f-ing reputation.
But what he's not understanding is that he's making things 10 times worse by throwing these fits, you know?
Right.
Because even on something like Top Chef, you know, these people who are trying to prove that they're a top chef, they're getting insane challenges. It's not like you're getting all the provisions you would ever want. No, you're getting a certain amount of things. Now you need to prove that you're a master of food and can pull something off, you know, that's amazing. So it'd be better if he just sort of looked at this as a creative challenge.
Right. I mean, on Top Chef, it's like, you have a radish and a cup of sugar. Go.
Right. Exactly.
You know, I mean, yeah, for Tom, it's like, how many times do we hear in our workspace, like, pivot, you got to pivot. If something isn't working, you got to pivot. Like, that's a huge thing. If what you've planned cannot come to fruition, then you need to change that plan and you got to run with it. So for him, it's like, okay, start thawing the frozen halibut, like figure out something else for lunch. You know, maybe there is another option. There's always got to be a way, right? When there's a will, there's a way. And I feel like he just couldn't get out of his own mind and couldn't see past all of the, you know, fuck ups that were happening from the provision people.
The other part that is very frustrating for me, just because I know people like this, that they think they can talk to you any kind of way they want. They can say whatever they want. But the second your patience runs out and you turn around and bite back, they're like, whoa, wait, what? Huh? Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's a little bit what happened with Sandy. Is she's like, you're not going to talk to me like that. And he's like, well, wait, was I out of line?
Right.
Yeah, Tom, you were out of line. You don't talk to your boss like that. What?
But I certainly won't be spoken to like that ever again.
Yeah. As frustrated as you might be with Sandy, she is your superior. She is in charge of this boat. She gave you this job. So it's just like, check yourself and check your respect and make sure that you are still being a good employee, no matter how upset you might be.
I thought that Sandy's reaction, though, was odd. Like, at first I was like, yeah, Sandy, you tell him, you know, stand up for yourself. But then she started crying in front of everyone. And I was so confused.
Everybody's emotional. You got a lot that's challenging you. I feel like it's emotional. It's tiring. We get mad, we want to do the best, but sometimes it's not going to be that. And I've said this from day one. I don't care what the client says about you. I care what I think about you, because I see you every day. Like, every day you work really hard, and I want you to know I care. And the thing is when you look at what's important, it's about a team. I want us to be champions, not at each other's throat on our last charter. Because I know if we give every ounce of everything we have on our last charter, we have a great charter.
Yeah, that came out of nowhere for me. I was really surprised to see her tear up.
I feel like she was almost embarrassed that she was, like, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm projecting because I was like, stop crying, but more than anything, it just showed how tired she is. And they all seem to be very tired, just very done, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, at that last charter, you're the light at the end of the tunnel. You've been traveling forever. You've been working your butt off. I mean, everybody has to be pretty exhausted at this point. But it was also a little bit strange that Sandy gave that whole tearful speech about, you know, we are a team and we need to unite and get through this together or whatever. And then cut to her saying to Bugsy off to the side, like, don't get on Tom's wagon. And Bugsy's like, well, that's not what I was trying to do. She's like, I'm trying to make sure that we all work together to get through this. And I appreciate that Bugsy stood up for herself and was a little bit like, why would you say that if, you know, this is our last charter, we have to work together to make sure that the guest experience is good. Because Sandy also was like, I don't care about the guests. I care about you guys. And she's very quick to come to the crew and present a problem that the guests have presented her, you know? So it was a little bit of like, there was a bit of a disconnect there that I was confused by, because it didn't seem like her actions were matching what she had said to them just a few minutes before or an hour before, however long it was.
The only thing I can imagine with Bugsy is that Sandy was watching her most positive team member suddenly become very distraught and negative a bit. You know, which, again, I agree with you. Like, Bugsy's just trying to do her job. Like, she's also taking on Tom's problem. And I think that's sort of what got Sandy. It's like, first I have Malia, now I have Bugsy. Like, stop it. Let him take care of himself.
Yeah, she's like, I don't want to lose you two, please.
Exactly.
Well, I need to know everything that you think about this Rob, Aisha, Jess, I don't want to call it a love triangle because I don't believe Aisha has interest, and she's said multiple times she doesn't have interest. But we also see Rob like flirting with the charter guests. Like, what the hell is going on here?
That's the thing, because with the Aisha stuff, yes, it's absolutely flirting, but I think it's innocent.
Yeah.
What Jess should be worried about, but of course she can't see it, is the flirting that's happening with Rob and this charter guest, because that's a special kind of flirting to be like, for him to be, I'm not used to being seen by someone. Like, what?
I don't know why speaking to you making me nervous. I don't know why.
You're being too nice.
No, I'm being honest. You seem very, like, observant and mindful.
I like to be.
I'm not used to being seen.
I hear you, I feel you.
He's getting ready to leave you, Jess. Like, if he's saying that to someone, you know what I mean?
Yeah. He's going to follow her off the boat.
The stuff with Aisha is just to me, I think you should almost look at that as like, thank you. You know, like, yes, please get my boyfriend all riled up and then like, I'll take it from here. You know what I mean? Like, let them have that special bit of attention. But do you think Aisha purposely put her hand on Rob's butt?
Okay, so I appreciate that Jess snapped a pic of this alleged butt grab because, like we've said before, you got to have receipts. If you're going to present some kind of situation, she's like showing him her phone. She's like, never want to see this again. I don't want to see this again. The hand was, that was not a butt grab, right? That was not like a, I'm going to squeeze the cheek. Like that definitely.
It was like my hand found a place to sort of rest.
Yes. And, you know, I feel like I've taken pictures like that where it's a whole line of people and you're trying to like awkwardly get your arms behind and like beneath the other people's and everyone's different heights and it kind of feels uncomfortable and you kind of just like rest your hand wherever you can like work it in. And I think that that was more so of what it was because I just don't think Aisha is that kind of person. And especially knowing that last season she left the boat kind of with Jack thinking things were going to be okay. And then he totally ditched her for his current girlfriend. And then they have a baby and like, it's all well and good with Jack. But I don't feel like Aisha would do something like that to somebody else because of her own experience.
Also, because wouldn't you be a little scared of Jess?
100%.
There's just a look in her eye that says to me, mm-mm, don't go there.
Yeah, I don't think I would try to get into the middle of all of that. And I don't think Aisha is trying to do that, but she is flirty by nature.
But she's also kind of flirty with Jess too. Like she's, you know, talking about breast size and are you wearing a bra? Like that's just, you're right. It's just her nature.
Right. And I think Jess needs to be more concerned with how flirtatious Rob is with other people as opposed to Aisha. And that's where all of the problems are really lying. You know, he's still in touch with his ex-girlfriend. He's flirting with Aisha in some ways. He is flirting with this charter guest and like rubbing her elbow because she got stung by a jellyfish. It's like he's the one you gotta maintain that you're having a problem with. And you know, it's just it's starting to get a little bit messier than I had hoped because I don't want Aisha involved in it. Side note too, going back to Malia and Tom, we know at this point that they have officially broken up. And Malia was also on Watch What Happens Live and basically hinted at, I don't want to say cheating, but that there was some kind of agreement that they were open when they were apart, like on a charter or whatever, and, you know, closed when they were together. But I guess that was, there was a misunderstanding somewhere along the way between the two of them on that.
Who misunderstood with someone else?
It sounds like Tom misunderstood an agreement. And that was when Malia was like, I'm good here. So yeah, she said that on Watch What Happens Live. So there wasn't much more to it, but it sounds like it's sort of a classic boatman's thing gone wrong. You know, I mean, they've been together for a really long time. So it's more than just a boatman's, but it started on a boat. They both work on boats. It seems to have gotten a little bit convoluted along the way. And now the two of them have gone their separate ways. Okay, let's do a little bit of Bravo's chat room because I want to talk about how it ties back into the Giselle Curtis situation. But first, I need to know your thoughts on Hannah Berner from Summer House, has a new boyfriend. They met in quarantine. She says it's the best sex she's had in her life. He's 44, which is 15 years older than her, and he's a comedian. I'm just going to point that out, not to stereotype, but I don't know.
Speaking of dating, I don't know if you've heard, but in a real 2020 quarantine plot twist, I trapped a man and I have a boyfriend.
What? How? But yes.
I feel like he's a man friend because he's only like 15 years older, which I love.
Okay, so the news is that I'm 29 and he is 44. He full head of gray hair. He's the first.
What's the math on that? What's the math on that?
It's 15 years.
Okay.
He's a comedian and I had watched him like 5 years ago at a comedy club and then he DM'd me recently and I was like, oh, that's the funny, you know, cute guy.
No, the comedian is where you lost me. Like I would rather date a chef turned actor any day of the week than a comedian.
a chef turned struggling actor over comedian. Well, I mean, that is sort of the interesting conversation, right? Because we've known a lot of housewives and various people who have had pretty big age gaps in their relationship. For you, do you feel like there is like a limit? Like, is it 15? Is it 20? Or is love just love?
I've always said that my ceiling is pretty high. I feel like my floor is lower, right? Like, I don't know that I would want to date a 25-year-old, but a 50-year-old, I actually don't think I would mind. What about you?
I mean, in my life, I think the furthest upwards I've gone was only 10 years difference. Below is harder to pinpoint because of like however old I was. I do remember finding out somebody was like 21 when I was in like my late 20s, and that felt like a big difference.
Yeah.
At that point. And I do remember I did meet somebody once and they were under 21 and I was probably like 23 or 24. And that just felt weird because like we couldn't like both be drinking out on a date at a restaurant. So that was strange. But I don't know. There's always this idea, especially with like straight relationships, like, you know, a cougar, if there's like an older woman with a younger man, we see that a lot on Real Housewives of New York City, you know, that is viewed one way, but then like an older man and a younger woman is viewed in a different way. So I think it kind of depends, but also it's like, there is no hard and fast rule, right? Of like, this is the number that you must obey. You know, it's just kind of like, there's definitely certain numbers you should avoid, but I don't know.
Do you and Danny have an age difference?
Only by a year. I mean, he's younger. His birthday is July 1988 and I'm May 87. So we have like a brief overlap of when we're the same age. But right, I guess, does it overlap that way?
I was talking to a friend and I was like, guy I'm dating, he's 29. And she goes,
is he?
And she goes, you can hardly tell. You know, like she just said it so quickly, like, don't worry about it. You know, but it was so funny. Like, it's this dirty thing that's like, we're just it's fine. It's fine. You know?
Oh my God. Yeah. No, I was going to just ask you that. I'm glad to know now.
Yeah.
But that's not that bad. I mean, it's 29.
It's not that bad, but it's just, it's one of those things where it's like, but it's not 30. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when's his birthday?
Oh, you just had
it. Okay, so we got another journey around the sun before the 30 hits. But you know what?
Like, I think the part that freaks me out is he was born in the 90s. You know, like that's a hard pill to swallow.
That sounds worse than saying 25. Yeah, so just leave that out. I mean, the 90s were the best decade ever. We can all agree. But like,
for sure. But, you know, to live in, not
right,
to be
but
born.
Like, I was like coming into that decade at like 3 years old. Like, I knew stuff already. So it's different. It's different. Okay. Well, getting into the Giselle hot mic moment with her dad. She did address it on Bravo's chat room as well, which I was really excited to see because I was very curious to know her perspective. I have to say, I think she dismissed it a little bit in a way that sort of blamed her dad's age, right?
So, you know, my dad is 82 years old, y'all. So, you know, 82-year-olds are going to say something reckless out their mouth. And that's fine. You know, he does support me. He loves me. If I got married tomorrow, he'd be walking me down the aisle. And that's mm-hmm. all that ever matters to me.
I think she's hurt. Like, that is what, that was my read on the situation, that was kind of embarrassing for her. And I get that. But so she sort of had to, and even for herself, explain it away.
For her to say that, you know, he's 82 and sometimes he can get reckless. Like, I don't think that was a reckless moment by any means. I think that was a genuine, sincere moment that he felt like he needed to express himself to, you know, a producer or the sound guy, whoever it was he was talking to in that moment. Like, he really felt a type of way and didn't feel like he could say it to Giselle and just had to share it with somebody. And maybe she meant reckless more along the lines of like, his mic was still on and he should have maybe been a little bit more aware of it. But like, come on, he's new to this. And like, you know, we do love a hot mic moment because they can bring us some pretty incredible, you know, storylines or plots and storylines that push it forward. But that moment in particular, you know, it's a little sensitive and I get it. But I don't know if it was as reckless as perhaps she she said it was.
All right, can we get into Rose and Thorn?
Yeah, let's do Rose and Thorn.
Okay, let's do Rose and Thorn.
Okay, what was your rose?
So my rose this week is going to Teddy Mellencamp Arroyave from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, because this week she gave a statement regarding, you know, not coming back next season to Beverly Hills. And Andy Cohen described it as no BS. And if you guys watched it on her Instagram, you know what we're talking about. I just love how raw and real it was. And it was really everything I always hope to get from a real housewife who's exiting a show.
Yeah. My rose, and I think you'll appreciate this, is actually from Bravo's chat room, and it's Portia explaining her born again veganism. So she was saying that she is 99.9% vegan unless God tells her to have some cheese on her salad. And I thought of you in this moment because I thought of myself and how my diet in the time that you've known me over the last, you know, 4 years or whatever has shifted from like, oh, you know, like, yeah, I eat everything to, well, I'm pescatarian now, to like, okay, I'm vegan for a month, to back to pescatarian, you know, like, and it just, like, I feel like I get exactly what Portia means by being like born again and also like not fully committed to this particular diet and lifestyle.
Hey, you know, we're all just trying the best we can.
Right. I mean, we'll see. But like, for now, I'm just like, I'm eating whatever.
All right, y'all. Well, my big news in my house is that I am a born again vegan. What is that? Ooh. Baby vegan, to be exact.
What's that? Just eggs?
Well,
no eggs. Yes.
So baby vegan is basically a vegan that is completely plant-based. So I'm about like 99.9% vegan, meaning if the Lord say, today you can have that cheese on that salad, then I am not going to pick it off, because that would be against what the Lord wants for me.
What was your thorn?
My thorn is that Sheena kind of came out and said that she and Lala had a falling out, and that Sheena was really going through it after her miscarriage, and she felt like Lala wasn't there for her. And, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but would rather go out with celebrities to dinner than to hear me talk about my problems. It's just sad on a lot of levels. You know, I hate when friendships end. That's, of course, only one side of the story. But I don't know. It just made me sad. So that's my thorn.
I know. Well, it's also like Sheena is a celebrity too. So Lala, just like invite her out. I mean, hello. All of the things that – all of the connections that Sheena has to various famous people and things. Like, come on. Like, Sheena is – a celebrity.
Right.
In my opinion. Right. My thorn is, I'm just going to give it to Tom and his behavior in the last couple of episodes of Below Deck Med. Like I said, I understand his frustration. The provisions thing really messed things up for his plans. But just the way he is treating literally everyone around him just feels so out of place. And it's just a very, you know, the energy could be repurposed into something positive. And I hope that maybe we see him turn around before the end of the season and take on some of that positivity. But we'll see. I don't know.
And we'll be back with an all-new episode next week, plus a bonus episode featuring the EP of The Real Housewives of Potomac, which you don't want to miss.
As many of you know, there is a major election this year.
And this year, it's not election day, it's voting season.
Coronavirus restrictions and other complications are causing many people to change their voting plans this election. Have you come up with a plan to make sure your vote counts?
Go to nbcnews.com/planyourvote to check out your state's voting rules and plan your vote with a state-by-state guide. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 9. And remember, watching Bravo isn't a guilty pleasure.
It's self-care.
Guys, let's keep the conversation going. We want to talk to you all week long. You can find us on Instagram at Bravo Daily Dish.
And on Twitter at Bravo TV. Just don't forget to use the hashtag Bravo Daily Dish.
Or reach out to us personally. I'm everywhere at Meg Segura.
And I'm everywhere at Eric J. Mack. That's E-R-I-K.
And if you're on Facebook, join the Daily Dish Facebook group.
You can post about what you're watching, your favorite shows, who's your favorite housewife, ask a question, start some drama. There's a lot of good stuff in there, so check it out.
You can also learn more about the podcast at bravotv.com.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Looking fine, and I got my girls with me. With the boys at the table getting tipsy, miss me, kiss.